Hello and welcome to Mobility Podcast. I'm Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy, and I'm here with my handsome, charming, very intelligent co-host.
He was just trying to see if I was paying attention. Also with you today is Pete Gould from Shared Mobility Strategies.
And in the spirit of Greg Rodriguez, views are our own. And we're at the Automated Vehicle Symposium in Orlando, Florida this week, and doing a series of exciting interviews with experts across the field. And today we're joined by our friend Avery Ash, who's back on the podcast.
Friend of the Mopod.
Great to be here. Yeah.
Someone recently suggested maybe friend of the mob. So stay tuned for t-shirts. There were a lot of raised eyebrows. I didn't get caught in the audio, but Avery's with Enrix and previously joined us to talk about their AV road rules. And I understand there's been an update, right?
Yeah, so we announced the next iteration of our AV road rules project, which we discussed on an earlier episode. So we'd announced that project last year. The too long didn't read is cities are looking for a means to create a digital rule book that can be used by automated vehicles to ensure that they have validated and up-to-date rules of the road for the public roads they'll be operating on. When we initially launched that last year, we launched with Boston, Austin, Las Vegas, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Portland, Maine, Transport Scotland, and Transport for West Midlands in the UK. And then a handful of vehicle operators who had signed on indicating that this sort of data would be useful for them in their testing and deployment of vehicles on public roads. Over the last year, we've learned a ton from that. It's been a really productive pilot period. And what we announced last week was version 2 of AV road rules, which we've dubbed road rules. The dropping of the AV is not removing the value of this as an AV product, but it's recognizing that the data sets that are being built through this sort of an effort have value outside of just automated vehicles across the mobility landscape. So the updates from version 2 really kind of fall in three buckets. We've added additional functionality, so that's not just more rules for the roadway, but also rules at the curbside and on the sidewalk. That was one of the top feature requests from our initial set of partners, was if we're going to go through this work for the roadway, create this database, that it would be really helpful to have curbside rules and sidewalk rules in the same place that could be shared with road users. We've also rebuilt our user interface. Part of this process and where we're differentiated from others in this space is that this is a city or a road authority validated data set and managed data set. So there, by virtue of that sort of a relationship, that sort of structure, you have to have a manual process to some extent for confirming and validating those rules by the city. So we need to make that as quick as possible to build that data set and be able to manage it. So we've rebuilt our user interface, much more focused on active workflows, on graphical representations of roads, lanes, intersections, so you can quickly go through that process of assigning rules. And then the third is an open specification for the API under which these rules are made available. One of the primary points from cities is if they're going to go through this process of building out a rule set, it needs to be interoperable, it needs to be easily shareable with any third party, be they an automated vehicle, a TNC, a scooter company, or a constituent who's looking for parking. So we announced a partnership at South by Southwest with Shared Streets, which is a project of the National Association of City Transportation Officials, an open data specification that they've created, a way to reference disparate data sets to the same roadways. So they'd announced partners Ford, Lyft, and Uber last fall, and we announced our partnership with them back in March. That all data coming out of AV road rules at that point, road rules now, will be matched to that shared street specification.
Great. So just as a reminder, you have this platform, and do cities gather the data themselves through this?
Yeah, so we're providing a tool for cities to build this database, and they can do that through a variety of methods, the data sets they may have, the data sets are assets they may already have available. Those could be anywhere from, at best, a JS format, which is pretty good, but all the way down through, paper copies of intersection designs or stop sign locations. So it really runs the gamut of work that's already been done that can be leveraged in this new format or in this new system. Or you can do it a manual way. So looking at bird's eye view photos, collaborating with Street View, or going out and actually walking the streets and checking what those designs are. Mm-hmm. But it does require that sort of manual and active step to be taken by the road authority to build out this database. And what we've found from our city partners is while there is an amount of effort that needs to go into it, once the system is built, it makes the life of not just road users easier, but also of the city. Having a central database means that, you know, after a storm, when there are questions about what was the sign structure like at this intersection, you're able to go back in and look at, well, here is the record of what the rules are on this road or at this intersection, that can be shared interagency as well as externally.
So you're not walking around being like, did I leave a sign there?
Yep.
Okay. And has that been a problem in the past?
Yeah, I mean, to varying degrees, there is, you know, there really hasn't been that digital record that matches the physical record of what rules are. You know, I think consumers probably find that most often in parking situations where you pull up to the curbside and there are four signs, all of which seem to be saying something slightly different, and it is completely unclear whether or not I can or can't park here, and you're left with kind of two choices. Do I risk it, or do I just go find another parking space?
Sell your car, buy a bike.
Right. Well, and I want to make sure that I can actually park my bike here. Is it going to be, you know, am I locking it up to something that I'm going to get ticketed for? They're going to get cut? I mean, what's the kind of system in place? And that's where we've built in that curbside and sidewalk functionality that is of value to other road users as well, having that certainty that comes the digital record of what are the rules that apply here.
Mm-hmm. You've already said curbs three times. I'm about to jump out of my chair. But before that, I have a question that's probably great for a podcast. I want to understand how visually this sort of looks when you're interacting with road rules.
Great. So close your eyes. And visualize
a
computer screen. Yeah, if you're driving, please don't close your eyes. You can visualize with your eyes open too. So the basic structure for this is that you would have an overhead view, so you can select a street or select an intersection on the bird's eye view. Mm-hmm. You're presented with an all-up schematic for that roadway, so intersection, segment, intersection, segment, intersection, segment. So you can select along that schematic on which portion of the roadway do you want to work on. You're then presented with a primary working panel that will show you that roadway, including the lane count or the intersection with all the lanes coming into it. And then a left-hand panel that has all the rules that you can apply to that roadway or to that intersection made available in a handful of different nested tables. So you can do mandatory rules like a speed limit, lane count, directional flow. You can add things like crosswalks, speed bumps, bike lanes. You can change lane structures. You can do individual restrictions for lanes. This is a bus lane, bike lane, etc. You can do dividing features, shoulder or curb structures, and then you can switch into a curb view. So the lanes collapse down and curbside comes up. Same overhead road schematic view. And you can start working on the curbside. So you can drop in things like loading zones, parking restrictions, TNC pickups. Yep, exactly. And then you can move to sidewalk and do similar pieces on the sidewalk. So EV charging stations, fire hydrant locations, or pickup and drop zones for e-bikes and e-scooters that are dockless.
So is this more or less fun to play than City Skylines or...
I would say it's probably less fun to play, but you're left with a more valuable product.
And you get paid for it. Some people get paid for it.
Some people get paid for it, yeah.
Cool.
Now, is there also a kind of like a Vision Zero data analysis angle to this, where now that you've got a digital map of here are all the rules and all that stuff, now layering on top of that, here's where our accidents are, and you can kind of do it, use it for more than just operational, but for a kind of looking back, you know, when they're asking for all this data, and we want to see scooters and all that, layering that on top of, okay, and we're seeing not only high traffic, but here's the speed limit and here's the curb and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly that broader application, not within road rules, but that, you know, as being part of the Shared Streets project, that Shared Streets is looking to unlock, which is interoperability. How do you match up disparate data sets? So what this is allowing is creation of a data set about rules that a city or a third party or an academic institution can then leverage to pull out all sorts of interesting findings about, all right, I've got fatal crash data, or I've got bike or scooter travel patterns, and being able to match that with, all right, well, let's look at, here are the bike and travel patterns. How do those match up with bike lanes in the city? And if they're not matching up, maybe that's an opportunity to do things differently or better.
Fascinating.
So before we got on the air, we were talking about how sort of the roles of cities is sort of changing. We're talking about AV deployment, and I'd be interested to sort of hear more of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there is if we pop back about 3 years to the kind of early days of these AV testing and deployment projects. The question that cities were coming to the table and asking was, okay, what should I be doing as a city to help support a successful tester deployment? And by and large, the response was not really much. Yeah. Maybe make sure your lines were painted correctly and signs were clear, but other than that, it was kind of stay out of the way, or we'll come ask you when we'll got a question.
You.
Right, right. And you know, we're kind of happy to participate in public forums and have a dialogue, but generally speaking, there wasn't a lot of agency that an agency could be taking. And you know, kind of flash forward to now when we're seeing a real role for cities begin to evolve of, you know, starting with where do I actually want a deployment to take place that's going to have some utility to my overall transportation system? So not just let's drop a shuttle and have it run around in circles for 6 months and count that as a success, but how do we actually deploy a first mile, last mile solution or connect a business center to a transit stop? So there's kind of that's kind of phase one is a more active structure of where do I want a deployment to take place and why? Mm-hmm. What's the goal? But then also now with road rules, there is an active step that a city can take to create a database of the rules that apply to its roadway, which can be leveraged within an HD map to improve safety and performance and effectiveness of vehicles in a way that's, you know, that holds true to the traditional role of an agency. So set, manage, update, communicate the rules of the roadway. And without this sort of a digital record, when you're left with just signs and road paint, and you've kind of seen that role of the road authority being, you know, being eroded by just by virtue of not having the tools to communicate with an automated vehicle system or a smartphone wielding consumer in the language that they're speaking.
Mm-hmm. And NREX is working across the world, and you know, obviously across the country. And I imagine there are already cities where AVs are being used, where your road rules have been implemented, right?
Right.
Are there any sort of lessons learned or things that you can share that have happened since then?
I think what we've seen is this helps to create a conversation between a vehicle operator and the city, or in a road authority. You know, about where do I want to be in operation, and maybe where do I want to expand operation to? Mm-hmm. So if I'm operating, so Las Vegas, RTC Southern Nevada was one of our founding road rules users. And actually at CES this year announced the expansion from just the Fremont Street experience where the Keolis Navia AAA shuttle was operating. Mm-hmm. So a pretty limited, you know, 20 to 30 blocks fixed route to the area around the convention center where lots of other AVs were testing during CES. Mm-hmm. A little more ambitious, more of a regional approach rather than the route approach. Mm-hmm. But this really drew out the value that the city saw in supporting testing where it was actually taking place, but also bringing themselves and bringing a tool to the table that helps get them into that conversation with the multitude of operators that may be on those public roads. And part of the value with AV road rules is, you know, we provide a tool for a city to create their own database, and it's made available via an open API. So any operator who's on those roads can call this API and get a record of validated rules that the city's providing, in a way that really preserves that traditional role of the city and helps to speed deployment and speed the safety of deployments.
And so would say that an AV operator be able to sort of access the same sort of dashboard that the city is able to use as well?
No, I mean what an operator would be accessing is the actual API that includes that data. So being able to call for a given route, what are the rules that apply along that route at this intersection? What turns can I make from which lanes? What's the governing device? Is it a tricolor stoplight? Is it a flashing red? Is it a yield sign? Is it a stop sign? Where are their crosswalks located? What's the speed limit? Where are their bike lanes? What's the shoulder? What type of shoulder type are we talking about? Is this a school zone? So it's less about being able to visualize that because it's an automated vehicle. It doesn't really visualize things in the same way that you or I might.
Right.
It's about accessing information that can then be applied to the roadways the vehicle will be on.
That's fascinating. I was going to say, how do we also now, you know, as it goes from that initial inventory to making it part of the culture of a city DOT to do this on each change, and kind of, it strikes me that there's a lot of folks who have been doing it one way for a while, and I'm curious how much is it we've found one, you know, leaning forward leader or you know, point person to making sure that this becomes something that's always updated, because this, the worst thing is besides not having an inventory is having an outdated inventory.
Yeah, and I mean I think what we've been, I've been glad to see is there's a huge appetite from the public sector to do this work, particularly at the individual level. It's not a whole lot of fun working in the dark without a concrete record of the assets you have and the rules that apply there. You know, it'd be the equivalent of, you know, trying to work right now on Windows 97, you know.
Which some of them very well may be.
Well, I mean, if you know, if my computer at home is Windows 97, like, I'm getting frustrated that it's slow, it doesn't work correctly, it's, you know, the Word doc I'm creating is incompatible with anybody else's computer. Am I going to have to learn more updating to, you know, Windows XP or wherever we are now? I'm going to have to learn something. But the benefit to it is I'm finally going to be able to be talking the same language and coming into the 21st century, which most agencies really want to be doing. I mean, they want to be more relevant. They want to be able to play a more active role with new mobility solutions. We see that a ton with scooters, where cities are kind of casting around for, this is, you know, these devices are being used by my constituents. There's demand for it. I don't really know how I interact, though, with these new road users and new devices on public right-of-way. It's finding new strategies to engage with new mobility solutions. And, you know, one thing we've underscored is that while there is a very clear and present need for automated vehicles to have access to this data, that building this sort of database, even if AVs are farther out in the future than we think they may be, there is an immediate utility across the range of road users for this sort of information. So a TNC operator wants to have access to pick up and drop off zones that could be managed by the city and pushed out by the city. You know, it's easy to kind of visualize, to envision that not too distant future where that information is not just, you know, fixed or maybe variable. In DC, there's a handful of days a week where there are dedicated pickup and drop-off zones for Uber and Lyft. And part of the reason that they've been able to successfully implement those is leveraging shared streets data. So the ability to take compatible information from both Lyft and Uber, look at pickup and drop-off points, identify where there are areas that pickup and drop-off points are too centralized and are clogging up roadways. They can use InterX data for that sort of stuff. And then put in place a system where, okay, on Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights at DuPont Circle or 14th and U Street, we're going to create dedicated pickup and drop-off zones that, yes, are removing some parking inventory. So there's a decision to be made by the city of, I'm going to lose some parking revenue, but I am decreasing congestion by opening up a dedicated spot to facilitate pickup and drop-offs rather than double parking. The key to unlocking those, that sort of function, though, is being able to communicate in the same language that a TNC, that a dockless bike or scooter company, that a digital navigation application, whether it's in vehicle or on phone or an automated vehicle, communicate in the same language they are. Provide an asset that they can then leverage to make better decisions about how to operate in the roadway.
And so yesterday we had Florida State Senator Jeff Brandis on, and we were talking about a number of issues. And one kind of Florida, you know, specific or prevalent issue that I just really never thought of is things like a hurricane evacuation. Mm-hmm. So is this a platform too where being able to quickly know, you know, if an AV is, you know, when they turn the, you know, all of the highways facing out, someone's going to be able to, you're going to have to be able to communicate to the AVs that it's okay to drive the wrong way on a highway.
So great example, and one that InterX had some experience with last year, which was during a hurricane, trying to get people out of town. One of the methods for that was we're going to reverse flow on the highway and create, you know, from moving from bidirectional to one directional roadway. So we're going to reverse flow on the southbound, and now everyone's going north to get out of the path of the hurricane. The means for communicating that out, I mean, everyone's using a navigation device, was Florida DOT had to contact all the different navigation providers and say, all right, hey Google Maps, hey Apple Maps, hey Waze, hey InterX, hey whomever, we're going to be reversing traffic flow. So can you go in and manually change the traffic flow for the rule for that roadway? And that was pretty effective. We were excited to see. We could watch on our real-time traffic flow. People started flowing on that other roadway. One of the challenge points was that while a handful of navigation providers changed the directionality on the highway, that the on-ramps and off-ramps weren't changed.
Yeah.
So the routing doesn't work if you can't get onto that.
I can't imagine highway. How annoying. That's well, where you right. just turn well, off yeah. the navigation system.
Well, and it's which, like, what a, which is what a lot of people did. Yeah. Well, everyone seems to be driving over there. I'm just going to do it. Mm-hmm. Under a system like Road Rules, though, you kind of take out the whole manual, you know, game of telephone of having mm-hmm. to call up and tell, hey, you know, hey, Hendricks, I want you to go into your map and like change the directional flow here because you got a hurricane. All right, now I'm going to hang up and call the next provider. This is a central stop where, you know, we or any other navigation provider can pull from them. All right, here's what the rules are right now. All right, they've changed directional flow on this highway because it's because a hurricane's coming in. And we've changed the on ramps and off ramps now. So all the off ramps are now on ramps, and that, you know, that's the sort of cutting down of ease of use that I think is a great example of what this sort of a digital asset can help to support. That's not an AV specific challenge. Mm. Certainly it's helpful for AVs as well. How does an AV know that it can go the wrong way on a highway?
Yeah.
If it's not being communicated by a trusted and validated source, you know, it probably shouldn't be the AV operator trying to make that call of, pretty sure I can drive the wrong way on the highway right now.
Feels right.
So there by necessity is going to have to be that interplay between the public sector and the private sector. And to date, there just hasn't been a tool for the public sector to come to the table and say, I can deliver you this asset that is in a format and in a language that you can understand that you're going to be able to leverage in your own operations.
Now, there's kind of two operational, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for here is, but there's kind of two ways this plays out. Is this this is how we inform the AV operators, or is it this is how we almost control the AV by telling you know, so in that highway example, on non-hurricane situations, we've decided that you cannot drive this direction, and so are we, by going through, you know, having this as a thing that we are, it is basically creating ODDs, or is it, or an ODD about you cannot drive here, you cannot drive into an on, you know, into an off-ramp. Is it a control of it, or is it a informing and then assuming that the provider?
I mean, it's informing. There is some implicit control from that, but I would argue that's no different than the current control that road authority exerts over human drivers. I mean, to put up a stop sign, I don't have to stop at that stop sign, but I'm going to either get a ticket or in a crash if I blow through it. We see rules, we as human drivers find rules every day, though, that we opt not to follow. Whether that's driving 72 in a 65 with the, like, you know, wink, wink, it's okay so long as you're under 10 miles an hour over, which...
Or the red light, the rural red light
right.
situation, yeah.
Right, or it's, you know, there's a double parked car, I'm going to cross a solid yellow line to go around it because there's no oncoming traffic, but I'm just going to make... I know it's not right, but it's kind of allowed. It's an implicit rule. I mean, that's the sort of conversation that this sort of dialogue starts to uncover, though, is, all right, if the rule is I can't cross a yellow line, the promise of AVs is that they can always follow the rules. The challenge is that... the challenge is that we have a system, though, that functions because everybody doesn't always follow the rules.
Otherwise, things would just come to a standstill.
Right. Or you would have either come to a standstill or the system just wouldn't function effectively. So, mm-hmm. you know, we deal with breakdowns in the system by adjusting the rules in gray areas. So mm-hmm. you're not supposed to double park, but if someone double parks, there's a cascading effect of mm-hmm. rules that, all right, I'm just going to choose to break that one because mm-hmm. that guy's breaking this rule, I'm going to break this one. And by and large, you can evaluate, seems safe enough, I'm just going to do it. So,
like, technically you're passing a vehicle, but...
Right, or, you know, it's you know, a and, like, you know, we've all pulled up to a red light and been like, I don't know if I can make a right on red here. Mm-hmm. Don't see any sign, I don't really know the rule, I'm in a new city, I don't really know the rules for this jurisdiction, I don't see a cop, no one seems to be coming, it's the middle of the night, I'm just going to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is an instance where having a digital record of that rule that could be made available to me in my vehicle as a human driver would be far preferable to the current system of, I did my best trying to use the lines and signs around me or lights around me. It hasn't communicated to me what the rule is. I don't know what it is, so I'm just going to guess. And the value of AVs is they don't guess. They can operate on clearly defined rules. The challenge is we have a system that has been built with a lot of gray area in those rules that this is facilitating a conversation or generating a conversation about how do we want an automated vehicle to deal with the rule set that we've kind of evolved around and beyond. I mean, if the speed limit on the highway, if it's 65, then we should be traveling 65. Nobody travels 65, so what's the right thing to do? Mm. What speed should an automated vehicle travel on a highway? If you're not traveling with the speed of traffic, are you creating more of a hazard than if you are? And if you are traveling at 75 and to 65, you're breaking the rules. So what do we want you to do? Mm.
Unfortunately, I think that's where we're going to have to leave it. We're running out of time. But Avery, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
And if people want to follow you online, where can they find you?
Yep, so I am Avery A. Ash, no E on the end of that, on Twitter and LinkedIn. So feel free to follow me. Always happy to chat or answer any more questions about the work we're doing.
Awesome. I'll put that in the show notes. And Pete?
You can find me on Twitter at SharedMobilitySS.
And I'm at AV Gregar. You can also follow Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast. And find our website, mobilitypodcast.com. Thanks again.
Thank you, guys.